Today, what is really behind the rise in the number of people arriving at the US border with Mexico? You don't need me to tell you that Donald Trump was a controversial US president. The issue on which he was perhaps most provocative was the question of immigration.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States. When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're bringing crime, they're rapists. This is an invasion. It's an invasion. And it's also an invasion of drugs coming in from Mexico, okay?
So it's not surprising that a centerpiece of Joe Biden's offer to America was a more humane policy at the US border. He used his first week in charge to sign executive orders that would wind back some of the most extreme elements that Trump put in place.
We're going to work to undo the moral and national shame of the previous administration that literally, not figuratively, ripped children from the arms of their families, their mothers and fathers at the border.
The executive actions include immediate lifting of a travel ban on 13 mostly Muslim and African countries and halting construction of the U.S.-Mexico border wall.
But since then, pictures of single adults, families, and last month alone, 9,500 unaccompanied children attempting to cross over has led Republicans to say the president's softer stance is causing a crisis on the border. Last week, Biden responded by placing his vice president, Kamala Harris, in charge of finding out what is going on. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, is there really a crisis at the US border? Nina Lacani, you're a senior reporter for Guardian US, and you went to the border with Mexico last week. Where exactly were you?
So I was in southeast Texas, in a region that's called the Rio Grande Valley. And that is, borders with Tamaulipas in Mexico. It's an area of farm production. Lots of fruit and vegetables are grown for the rest of the US. You know, it's incredibly flat because it's agricultural land, really quite expansive. You get these sunrises and sunsets that sort of are extraordinary because the sun just looks so huge because of the flatness of the place. And all of that work, all of that sort of farm production and food packaging is done by migrants, by mostly undocumented migrants. And so there's always a constant flow of people sort of moving across the border and then moving north.
And the reason we're talking about this is that the number of people being stopped from crossing the border is the highest it's been for 2 years and on track to hit a 20-year high. 100,000 attempted it in February alone. Did it seem busy when you were there?
No, not particularly. I mean, we spent a lot of time following the river and the border wall, which has been erected in many parts of that part of the country, along the road, which is just, you know, within meters of the river and the wall. We came across one detention. They were literally running after this group of people in the sort of dry vegetation on the side of the road. There were 7 people, 3 Mexicans, 4 Central Americans, of which one was a woman, had been detained, and they had just crossed over the river irregularly, you know, so without documents, without having passed through a border point, and they were handcuffed to each other.
Did you get the chance to talk to any of them?
There was a young guy called Christian, a 20-year-old from a place called Santa Barbara, which is in the west of Honduras. He was just bewildered. I mean, he just looked completely devastated, you know, by what was happening to him. He, like many of the people who have been attempting to cross in recent weeks and months, is what I think we should call a climate migrant or a climate refugee. That part of Honduras was hit by 2 deadly hurricanes in November of last year, Eta and Iota, within 2 weeks of each other. And those 2 hurricanes, millions of Hondurans and Guatemalans, without their crops, without homes, without basic services. And what he was able to tell me in the short time I had to talk to him at the side of the road was that their home and their small piece of land had been hit by both hurricanes, which meant that their fields had been underwater for 2 months. And what that meant for them is that they lost the crops that they used to live off, to survive off for this season, but also the ground was so inundated, they were unlikely to be able to plant crops for next season. And he said to me, you know, we've got no food and we've got no money.
So what happened to Christian and the six others?
So all their personal belongings were put into plastic bags. They were asked to give their names, where they came from, how old they were, you know, to a bilingual Border Patrol agent. And then, you know, really within a very short period of time, within minutes, they were loaded into a Border Patrol truck after being searched physically. And that group of people would have been deported that day, I'm sure.
So you saw that group actually crossing into the US. Who else did you meet over the week?
I met a family from Guatemala City, a woman called Alicia Barrios, a 31-year-old who was 7 months pregnant with her husband, Nelson, and their 4-year-old daughter, Brittany. This family had travelled overland from Guatemala City, which is about 1,500 miles, and it had taken them about a month. And they had presented at the port of entry to seek asylum. So that's how I met them. And so they had just been released into the US. Alicia had decided to leave Guatemala City in February after an incredibly difficult year. They were already in trouble before the pandemic struck. Nelson, her husband, had lost his job in a plastics factory, and they had just got to the point where they just didn't have enough to eat. So they took the decision to claim asylum in the US. And I interviewed them sitting on a bench on the street just outside of the immigration centre. The journey sounded horrific. They'd spent a lot of nights sleeping outside in the forest or in mountains. She talked about her daughter, Brittany, crying from hunger in the cold. You know, they just couldn't hold back the tears.
How do you feel when you're sitting there having conversations like that?
It obviously makes me feel incredibly sad, you know. I mean, I can't remember the last time I had so many people burst into tears when I was talking to them, you know. There is so much desperation in Central America. People, human beings are just driven by this, you know, desire to make things better for their kids. That's universal. When you're in the US and what you're seeing in the headlines and what you're hearing people talk about is this surge in migrants, this crisis at the border, because there's been an increase in the number of people at the border. I mean, it's so dehumanizing to think about it in this way.
And obviously you've heard these stories from Christian, from Alicia, from others. Are there reasons similar to those given by the tens of thousands of others who are coming to the border?
Absolutely. You know, I think that it's very, very rare that a family or an individual takes a decision, you know, to embark on one of the most dangerous migration passages in the world, overland through Mexico, because of one thing. It's usually a mix of, you know, physical violence and structural violence, the failures of the state, extreme poverty, family issues. The climate crisis is now playing a, you know, increasingly big role. I mean, we've talked about this on the podcast before, of drought in Central America driving migration. So it's often very layered.
And it's impossible to ignore the political backdrop, that huge ideological shift for America from the Trump era to the Biden one.
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
Biden's taking over from a president who put hardline immigration policies front and centre in a really controversial way. In terms of the border, what did he inherit from Trump and what has he changed so far?
From day one, Trump set about dismantling the immigration and asylum systems in the US.
Zero tolerance for criminal aliens.
My
Zero.
First hour Zero. In office, those people are gone.
And he did so using a whole range of cruel, inhumane and racist policies, you know, which had a huge impact on asylum seekers and migrants. The Trump administration evoked a policy called Remain in Mexico.
The Trump administration is planning to expand the policy known as Remain in Mexico,
where CBS News people seeking asylum at the port of entry who the US authorities decided may have an asylum claim were shipped back to Mexico to wait their asylum cases in Mexico, right? People were being forced to wait in dangerous border towns, in tents, without services. Then when the pandemic came, he used that as an excuse to completely shut down the border. He invoked what is called a Title 42 order, which basically stopped anybody presenting at the border without a visa or a passport from entering. Now, that remains in place. That hasn't changed with Biden. Biden promised to create a more humane and fair asylum system. And the first step he's taken towards that is to start reversing Trump's Remain in Mexico policy. So under Biden, since he's come into power, some of those people, about 25,000, have now been allowed into the US in order to have their asylum claims heard in court. That has changed. And Biden has promised to overturn this cruel and inhumane and racist policy of Remain in Mexico. Biden's administration is also legitimately processing the claims of unaccompanied children at the border who are coming in. And there are more children coming to the border than there were last year. But again, that's because Trump had shut down the border completely.
Yeah, I found it really shocking and upsetting to watch footage of unaccompanied children arriving in such large numbers, and to think that at one point they would have been sent back. Now, some parts of the media and some politicians are looking at all of this, the children, but also the families and adults traveling alone, and calling it a crisis.
We have a crisis at the border.
It's the Biden open border policies.
This current administration is making much, much worse what's going on down there.
The number of unaccompanied minors has tripled at the border.
I know you were only on one section of the border, but having been there, does calling it a crisis seem like a fair representation?
I really don't. Last year, and I think this is really important, to underline, the border was effectively closed, and it was, you know, done on the basis that people without documents presented a bigger health risk to Americans during the pandemic than, for example, holiday makers or spring breakers, right? But what that meant effectively is that for the past 12 months, the need in Central America has continued to rise, but nobody was being allowed in. And so when you talk about an increase in numbers, first of all, there is always a seasonal change in migration. So there's always an increase in February, March, April. As people leave home after the new year, there's a need for more farm workers in the US, and the weather is more hospitable. And then you see a decline start to happen in the sort of, you know, in the middle of the summer. So sort of June, July, August, because the border crossings, especially the desert, become deadly. And to suggest this is new because Biden has come into power is just utter rubbish. On top of that, you've got a year's worth of pent-up need, right? Just because Trump shut the border didn't mean people didn't have legitimate reasons for trying to come to the US. All of that need was still there. And so when you look at the numbers, the increase, which is not insignificant, but it is absolutely not a surge, is easily explained by this sort of 12 months of the border being shut completely.
Has the change of president, and so some policy, as you set out, change people's experiences on the border? Is that what you heard from those you spoke to?
I think it's really random. You know, I think for Alicia and Nelson and Brittany, yes, it has changed, you know, because they are among a small group of young families, so families with kids under six, who Customs and Border Protection at some points along the border are releasing into the US to await their asylum claim to be processed in court. But for many people, no, you know, their border is full of dazed and confused and desperate young families from Central America who are just being, you know, denied the opportunity to have their asylum cases heard. So for most people, the experience hasn't changed because Title 42, which was invoked by Trump a year ago, hasn't been rescinded. This idea that it's been touted by anti-immigration activists and Republican hardliners that there is a border crisis because Biden has opened the floodgates and he's allowing illegal immigrants to come into the US and bring COVID with them is absolutely untrue. That just isn't happening. I just can't stress enough that the misery and the desperation driving people to seek a better life wasn't created by Biden. It wasn't, you know, this is years in the making.
So if it's not a crisis from everything you've seen, then why is this being overblown? In whose interest is it to call it a crisis?
I think in the US, immigration has always been used very successfully as a political tool. And I think many Republicans have their eyes on the midterms next year. It's also worth mentioning that the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, he announced there was a crisis at the border in February and, you know, deployed state troopers and the National Guard to stop, you know, the invasion of illegal migrants really quite quickly after he came under heavy criticism for his handling of the big freeze in Texas, which caused, you know, a really significant loss of life and utter devastation to the state.
78 sex offenders and 62 gang members. And so in response to this, we had to launch Operation Lone Star. Operation Lone Star includes National Guard as well as Texas Department of Public Safety officers to prevent the most dangerous criminal elements as well as the opioids that they're trying to smuggle across.
It has been argued by some that this was a sort of, you know, very useful distraction tactic used by him to draw attention away from his own shortcomings and to the border. So I think that absolutely is happening. And secondly, I think that border security is a massive industry. The border security industrial complex is worth billions and billions of dollars. Customs and Border Protection and Border Patrol, who are sort of, you know, within that institution, have successfully argued for more federal funds year after year after year. Their numbers have quadrupled in the last 24, 25 years, right? While actually detentions at the border have continued to go down. And so, and it's not just that, it's not just them, it's not just that revenue. I mean, when you're on the border and when you're driving along or on the river, the technology is like incredible, right? There are radars, there's sensors, there's cameras. I mean, when you go out into the river on a boat, which is incredibly hard to do now because Homeland Security has sort of seized so much of the land and the border wall is there. But when you do, immediately you'll see a Border Patrol agent pop up somewhere on land because a sensor will have been triggered. And all of that stuff is private contractors. You know, people are making a lot of money out of the border crisis. Border security is big business. They do not want to see funds decrease under the Democratic Party. Yeah, they want to see the federal dollars keep flowing. Clearly, the border wall construction is not going anywhere now that Trump is out of power, but they don't want other dollars to stop coming their way. So I think that's also significant. I don't think we shouldn't underestimate the role of corporate America in wanting to ensure that the border crisis remains a border crisis.
David Smith, as Washington Bureau Chief for The Guardian, you're seeing this through a national political lens. Nina says that on the ground at the border, it doesn't look like a crisis, but it must feel like one for the Biden administration.
It certainly depends on perspective. I mean, I think in the context of national politics, this is certainly Biden's first emergency, if you like. His administration so far has hit the ground running. A $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package was passed through Congress. Biden, Vice President Harris and others have been touring the country promoting that. Really, his critics and Republicans in particular were looking for something to change the narrative, to blow Biden off course. And they sense an opening on immigration and the border. There's certainly a sense of the Biden administration in damage control mode. Every press briefing recently has been dominated by the subject of the border. I was in the briefing room a few days ago and asked the press secretary, Jen Psaki, you know, should Joe Biden have spoken more clearly from the beginning, do not come to the border?
Was a message sent that President Biden's America would be more welcoming?
She gave rather a terse answer.
We've been conveying the messages that I have just conveyed from the beginning. Did you have a second question?
There are many critics who would dispute that, who would point to Alejandro Mayorkas, the Homeland Security Secretary, past remarks where he was saying, do not come to the border now.
We are not saying don't come. We are saying don't come now.
And that word now seems to be doing a lot of work. And he's been trying to clean that up. And in recent days, he's been giving a lot of TV interviews on the prestigious Sunday shows in America and saying, do not come to the border at all.
Our message has been straightforward and simple. And it's true. The border is closed.
Trying to send a clear message that the border is closed.
The message is quite clear. Do not come. The border is closed. The border is secure.
Especially in the time of a coronavirus pandemic. And Biden himself addressed the issue at a press conference last Thursday.
There is a significant increase in the number of people coming to the border in the winter months of January, February, March. It happens every year. And by the way, does anybody suggest that there was a 31% increase under Trump because he was a nice guy and he was doing good things at the border? That's not the reason they're coming. The reason they're coming is that it's the time they can travel with the least likelihood of dying on the way because of the heat in the desert, number one. Number two, they're coming because of the circumstances in country. The vast majority, the overwhelming majority of people coming to the border and crossing are being sent back.
And we heard some pretty tough language from Biden, but on the other hand, he also used the press conference to make clear he wasn't going to send unaccompanied children back.
Well, look, the idea that I'm going to say, which I would never do, that if an unaccompanied child ends up at the border, we're just going to let him starve to death and stay on the other side. No previous administration did that either, except Trump. I'm not going to do it. That's why.
Now, arguably, if there was ever a time for taking a moral stand on an issue like this, it is after a huge election win. Does Biden see it like that, or are the midterms already looming large for the Democrats? Do they think immigration is likely to become a big issue? Clearly, Republicans would like it to be.
Yes, and there's an argument to be made that immigration has really become the defining issue for Republicans. Their critics would say they don't really stand for much else anymore. It seems likely Republicans will push it hard again in the 2022 midterms. There is also an argument that that's not a great idea. When you actually look at a lot of the public opinion polling, many Americans are in favor of a more tolerant immigration policy. It's far from certain that this will be an election winner for Republicans, but they don't necessarily have that much else going for them.
Isn't one of the issues here that he's not just facing Republicans, but members of his own Democratic Party? We've heard centrist congressmen warn about anything that might encourage people to come to the border.
The message can't be that if you get to our southern border and get across, we're going to process you and release you into our communities.
The president or the administration's message is not getting through. This message about don't come now, come later, without due respect, is not being heard down there.
But on the other side of this argument, Biden is also facing his progressive wing, many of whom want a softer border policy.
Yes, Joe Biden's in charge of an unwieldy coalition in the Democratic Party. And particularly early on, when the situation at the border first became apparent, there were some voices on the left, such as Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, who said this is just not right under any administration to have children in these detention facilities close together. All of that said, in the last week or two, I've been mildly surprised that the left is relatively quiet. I think they have listened to some of the administration's explanations that, in a sense, it's a victim of its own compassion. Remember, the Trump administration was just turning children away into the Mexican desert. It's Biden who is allowing these children to stay, however imperfect the circumstances and whatever stresses that's putting on the system. So there is a defense to be made for what Biden is doing. And I think it fits into a bigger picture where progressives are still giving Biden time, allowing him some political capital. They're delighted in the victories they've had so far. They're reluctant to jump the gun and criticize too quickly.
Will Biden go down there, or would that just be playing into the hands of Republicans by validating the idea that it is a crisis?
I think they're really wrestling with that question for that reason. In some ways, they want people to stop talking about it. They want to deflect attention in other directions. And so a presidential visit would indeed be some kind of acknowledgement. Okay, we do have a crisis here.
Are you thinking of going to the border?
At some point I will, yes.
Do you want to see firsthand what's going on in those facilities?
I know what's going on in those facilities.
On the other hand, of course, Biden is famous for his empathy, his compassion, his human touch. He could be quite good in those circumstances. They'll continue to wrestle with that one, and they might just hope that the issue fizzles out a bit and other things take priority.
Coming up, why trying to solve this problem involves looking not at the US border, but somewhere else. Nina, what's going to happen next?
People are going to keep trying to make better lives for themselves and their families, right? Desperate people do desperate things. And the situation in Central America and many parts of Mexico is desperate. I think in order to understand what's happening at the border, we have to understand the context in which people are living and fleeing, right? Without doing that, you're never going to solve anything. You know, you cannot solve a migration crisis at the border because it doesn't start at the border. You have completely collapsed economies, worsening rates of poverty and inequality, extreme weather events linked to global heating, dysfunctional, corrupt political systems, autocratic presidents in power. So all of those things create this sort of toxic mix, which is what has been driving forced migration and asylum from Central America for as long as I've worked in this region, which is, you know, more than 8 years. Those things are so deep-seated and they go back way further. You know, I think in order to understand what's happening at the border, we have to understand the context in which people are living and fleeing. You know, and so the US has to really radically change the way that it works with Central America. It's been doing this for decades, right? It's been propping up authoritarian regimes since the civil wars of the 70s, 80s and 90s.
I mean, it sounds like a minefield. What chance is there of Biden actually sorting it out? What would it take?
I think it is a minefield, and it's, you know, these are decades long sort of structural inequalities. But I think that investing in anti-impunity, anti-corruption institutions in these countries and holding, you know, these sort of governments and business leaders, you know, the elites that really control politics in these countries to account, right, really to account, not just when it suits the US to do so, and also to stop providing military assistance to these repressive regimes, which are contributing to this exodus of people. You know, I mean, in Honduras, there was a political coup in 2009, which the US really played a significant role in enabling. And since then, hundreds of thousands of Hondurans have fled, right? While the same political party, which is alleged by American prosecutors to be a criminal syndicate, has been kept in power thanks to the US government. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. How can you address the root causes of migration while propping up the people that are overseeing the corruption, the poverty, the repression, the misery? it's so contradictory. And the US policy in Central America has always been like that for decades and decades. So it's going to really, I think he's right not to take, knee-jerk action. It really needs a major rethink in the way that the US does business with, interacts with Central America. This is a long-term problem and it's not going to be solved in 1 year, 2 years, or even 4 years.
Nina Lacani, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Nina Lacani and David Smith. My thanks to both of them. Do go to theguardian.com to read their reporting on all of this. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Lucy Greenwell. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.